Chapter 15. Every Angle. The young drow warrior peered over the edge of the balcony, trying to stay out of sight. He didn't want the man in the mostly empty chamber below him to know he was there. To him, it was like watching a woman undressing or a priestess at prayer. If the target knew he was there, watching, the thrill would not be the same, nor would the insights he hoped to gain. Deneen Dowerden, second boy of the house, had gone to great lengths to manipulate this area of the balcony, ringing House Dowerden's training gymnasium, so that he might watch the display below unnoticed. Now, finally, his efforts had paid off. Below him stood Zacnaphane, the drow whose reputation was spreading far and wide across the winding ways of Menzo Berenzon. Stripped to the waist, the man's sinewy muscles glistened with sweat as he had already completed the more energetic part of his daily training ritual. Now he stood calmly, his back not quite square with Deneen's position. His arms hung loosely at his sides. He was affecting a posture of relaxation, a normal pose in an unthreatening situation. Before him and to the right, a large rat sat up on its haunches, chewing some tidbit it had found. Deneen didn't understand that. There were not supposed to be rats in House Dowerden. How might one have gotten into this room? The vermin squeaked and skittered, and then Deneen understood the creature to be somehow a part of this practice session, for Zacnaphane exploded into action. Up came his hands before him, taking with them his swords from their scabbards. His left hand blade rolled over as it rose, right over his shoulder to stab, point down behind his back, immediately sweeping across and up over the back of Zacnaphane's right shoulder. Even as that sword crossed by, the weapon master sent a backhand stab out behind him with his right blade. And with all that, he was turning, the left blade coming back across before him. Deneen's warrior instincts informed him that Zacnaphane would go right around with that blade, a complete circuit that would have it cutting across as he turned around and backed away, disengaging from the imaginary assassin who had tried to stab him in the back. But no. Zacnaphane stopped the blade's swing, reversed his grip, and thrust it back as he had with the right, and he came around behind it, now with his right-hand blade recovered and cutting a wide and wicked down-angled slash. Deneen had seen Zacnaphane hundreds of times, had even sparred with him, but never like this. Zacnaphane sheathed his weapons and threw a crumb across the floor to the rat. Once more the rodent sat up and began to eat, and once more Zacnaphane assumed his relaxed posture, exactly as before, except that now Deneen could see the man more from the front. The rat squeaked and moved, and the weapons master's blades seemed to simply appear in his hands, the left going up and over with startling and beautiful fluidity. Deneen's gaze locked on Zacnaphane's left hand, on the intricate work of the weapon master's fingers in the brilliant and exact sword roll. Not a wasted movement, none. Deneen tried to keep up with the routine, the sweep, the thrust, the second unexpected thrust, and the final devastating slash. Every movement bled into the next, every turn, twist, or shift of balance in completing one move angled, positioned, and set Zacnaphane to execute the next. Another crumb flew out toward the rat. Zacnaphane was using the living creature because its timing could not be predicted. The rat, not Zacnaphane, would dictate the furious start. Deneen thought it perfectly brilliant. Instead of dictating the beginning of his practice, which of course was no option for a man defending against an actual ambush, this superb weapon master was letting a creature, something wholly chaotic, do it. Even more remarkable, the fighting sequence on display before Deneen was designed for a specific and singular situation, for one unexpected strike from one angle alone. How many hundreds of hours had Zacnaphane toiled at perfecting these few sequential movements? How many other similar routines had he devised and perfected for other specific threats? Up there on the ledge of the training gymnasium, Deneen Dowerden came to understand the truth of Zacnaphane. Deneen thought himself a promising young drow warrior, and he had witnessed many of Menzo Berenzon's finest swordsmen at play, even a real duel between masters on two separate occasions. He understood the arts martial and the beauty of the sword dance. But this was something more. This was a level of perfection and danger Deneen had never imagined. Again, Zaknafane went through the routine, and again after that. He'd do it a dozen more times, Deneen understood. 2 dozen, perhaps. 100, perhaps. Deneen shook his head and slipped back silently, exiting the gym through the small secret door he had fashioned. Walking alone out in the corridors of the house, he could only shake his head, his thoughts lost somewhere between the sheer beauty of what he had seen and his sudden and intense dislike of Weapon Master Zaknafane. At one point he stopped, closed his eyes, and replayed the sequence, the rolling sword, the thrust and turn, the slash. How much would he have to sacrifice to even approach that level of precision and speed? Could he even attain such mastery if he gave every hour of his life in the pursuit? Deneen appreciated Zaknafane. Deneen was in awe of Zaknafane. Deneen hated Zaknafane. Daphne nearly gasped aloud when Zaknafane entered the oozing Myconid, more than 7-10 days since the fight she had arranged against Arath Asune in the alleyway. She couldn't deny her happiness at seeing him, but neither could she ignore her profound trepidation. Her heart pulled her toward the Weapon Master. Her head told her to run. It was rare with Daphne, or with any dark elf, that her heart would win out, but this time she did not heed the sound warnings and flee, and instead found herself standing beside the seated Weapon Master. Zaknafane looked up at her and offered a smile, warm and inviting, and she thought it sincere. He motioned for her to sit beside him, so she did. "I was hoping to find you here," he confided. "You didn't come here at the request of Jarlaxle." Daphne raised 2 fingers and motioned to Harbendair. "I haven't seen or heard from Jarlaxle since that day in the alleyway when he interrupted my victory."
"Victory?"
"Oh, yes," Zaknafane assured her. "And Arath Asune knew it. He has left Menzo Berenzon, I am told."
Temporarily, perhaps, Daphne thought, but didn't say.
Harbendair arrived with a pair of drinks and set them down before the patrons. No sooner had he turned and started back to the bar, though, than Zaknafane pushed his glass away. Daphne looked at him curiously.
"Surely you do not believe..."
Zaknafane reached across to her, took her drink, and slid his in its place. He sat back in his chair, arms crossed over his chest in that typical and powerful Zaknafane pose, one hand coming up just enough to motion for her to go ahead and partake. Daphne looked down at the swirling amber liquid in the glass, then over at Harbendair, who was not looking their way. She shrugged and waggled the fingers of one hand over the glass, casting a minor spell, then grabbed the glass, lifted it in a toast, and brought it to her lips. No sooner had she set it down than Zaknafane slid the other glass before her and motioned for her to purify that one as well.
"That was mine," she protested. "Do you think Harbendair would deign to poison me?"
Zaknafane arched his eyebrows and offered a sly grin, but made no move to uncross his arms again and take the glass back. Daphne started to laugh, but bit it back, realizing the implications of Zaknafane's continued doubts. He knew that Harbendair wouldn't poison Daphne, but did the barkeep, perhaps with Daphne's help, expect a switch of glasses? The woman laughed and cast another spell, noting the intensity of Zaknafane's stare as she went through the precise motions and uttered the exact syllables. When she finished, she started to slide the glass back to him, but to her surprise, he stood up.
"Let us be gone from this place," he said.
Daphne started to motion to his drink, but changed her mind when she noted Zaknafane's hateful stare toward the bar. She rose to follow, and well enough, she decided. She had not been in Zaknafane's arms for far too long. Sometime later, they lay beside each other, the soft glow of candlelight catching pinpricks of sparkle in the beads of sweat they both wore.
"I missed you," Daphne said.
"I trust it was worth the wait."
"You were worth the wait," she corrected. and ran her finger playfully along the top of Zacnaphane's nose. They came forth from house to Werden 3 times in the days after the fight. But alas, you were not to be found.
I didn't know. I still do not what happened in the alleyway, she replied. And when you did not return immediately, I became afraid. I thought it best that I tend to other matters.
One thing I have been curious about, Zacnaphane said. Tell me, however did you coax Arethas Hewn into that alley that night?
Same way as I lured you, Dabney replied, hardly considering the response, though it was not entirely true.
Zacnaphane had gone there expecting a fight with Arethas, but Arethas had gone in anticipation of a rendezvous with Dabney and a different weapon master, one regarded by most as the greatest warrior in the city. She caught a hint of doubt in Zacnaphane's eyes as he stared at her. Just a flash, an instant, that either passed as soon as it had begun or had been suppressed before it could be revealing. Late one night, many days later, Dabney sat alone in one of her apartments, reading through some histories of Menzo Berenzon that Jarlaxle had given to her. She was lonely, and more than that, she was bored. She hoped that Zacnaphane would come out again soon. She hoped that Jarlaxle would start some mischief or other, something, anything, to bring some excitement to her life. Most of all, she wished that Matron Sulez would have given her enough credit for her efforts bringing Zacnaphane and Arethas Hewn to battle to follow through on her promise and formally allow Dabney into the ranks of her promising house. Yes, that would be grand, she thought. House Barrison del Armgo was full of men, and having so many about to serve her every need seemed much more enjoyable than this lonely existence, where she was always looking over her shoulder. The knock on her door startled her, an insistent, sharp rapping. Not Zacnaphane's knock, she knew. Dabney silently placed her book down beside her, then rose and scanned the room, noting her escape routes. Taking great care, she padded to the door and listened. "Do not make me wait, priestess," came a voice from the hallway, a woman's voice, and one that Dabney recognized. She sucked in her breath, near panic, her thoughts swirling with great hopes and great fears. What was Matron Sulez doing outside her door at this hour? How did the matron even know where to find her? Dabney's sensibilities told her to flee, to run out one of the secret exits in the room, through the narrow tunnel walls, and out of the building altogether. She almost did it, even took a step toward the hearth with the fake shelves beside it. She held back, however, and shook her head at her own stupidity. This was a matron, and a powerful one at that. Sulez would not be here knocking on Dabney's door if the entire area within and about the small inn weren't teeming with her agents. Fleeing was not an option. And even if she did somehow get away, there were few places she could hide where Matron Sulez couldn't find her. The knocking on the door of her secret apartment was evidence of that. As if on cue, another sharp knock had her nearly jumping out of her soft slippers. Without hesitation this time, she yanked the door open. "Your pardon, Matron," she said, and she began smoothing the ruffled material of her robe. Matron Sulez pushed past her into the room. Dabney managed to glance both ways along the corridor and was happy to see that the powerful woman at least seemed to be alone. "What have you learned?" Sulez asked impatiently. She scanned the room briefly, then took the largest and most comfortable chair as her own. "Jarlaxle intervened," Dabney replied, closing the door. "Yes, of course, but what have you learned? You have seen Zacnaphane de Werden, yes?" Dabney nodded. "Yes, and I retain his confidence." Sulez gave her a look that seemed more scowl than intrigue. If only someone who held confidence with Zacnaphane would find a way to use that to be rid of him, she said. A great gift that would be for me. Dabney tried to digest that. "Arethas Hewn returns to Menzo Berenzon on the morrow," Sulez said. "You would have me arrange another meeting between those two?
Do you think that you retain the confidence of Arethas Hewn as well?"
Dabney didn't really know what to make of that statement.
You only gave Zacnaphane that which he desired, foolish girl, Sulez scolded. Arathis Yuin could not defeat him in that alley, given the way you arranged the meeting. Zacnaphane came in aware of an impending fight, and his opponent did not.
But Zacnaphane did not use that advantage, because he did not need it, Sulez replied.
Arathis Yuin serves best from behind his foe. He could not beat Zacnaphane in such a fight as you arranged. He knows it. Zacnaphane knows it, and you know it.
The look Zacnaphane had flashed at her when she had answered his question as to how she had persuaded Arathis Yuin into that alley came back to Dabney then, that instant of surprise from the cunning weapon master. If that is true, then at least Jarlaxle would have lost his oldest lieutenant, one he has trusted since before the Treyrock-Simfrey War, Dabney said.
Wounding Jarlaxle would please me, yes, but I care nothing for Arathis Yuin. My desire is to halt the ambitions of Matron Malice Doerden. Her actions are complicating my own ascent.
What are you saying, Matron?
The task before you is to rid me of Zacnaphane, however you might. Another fight with Arathis Yuin? Yes, that would be fine, but it will be no fair fight this time. I'll not depend upon the blade of Arathis Yuin to defeat the great Zacnaphane.
Dabney swallowed hard and had no response.
Zacnaphane has been about again of late, and Arathis Yuin will soon enough return. I am possessed of great patience, child, but I have already waited many months. When you are ready, I will grant you those resources that you need to properly complete your task.
Yes, Matron, Dabney said. Because after all, what else could she possibly say?
So here we are, Jarlaxle told Zacnaphane and Arathis Yuin, the three of them sitting in his chambers in the Claw Rift beneath House Oblodra. I trust that enough time has passed to dull the edges of your common hatred.
You underestimate my determination, said Zacnaphane, glancing at his enemy.
You overestimate the amount of time, Arathis Yuin added, meeting that stare with his own. And you both disregard the cost of your feud, said Jarlaxle. He motioned down the hallway, and a fourth entered the gathering, a smallish man dressed in finery worthy of a noble house. His face was clean-shaven, his hair cut short and neatly trimmed. Because of your stubbornness, I have found the need to bring in another confidant, Jarlaxle explained. One who will quickly climb above the both of you in the hierarchy of the band, I'm sure.
Good for him. I am of House Doerden now by Jarlaxle's demand, said Zacnaphane, as if that explained and so justified his disregarding the remarks.
And that might prove temporary. And you might indeed need me again some day, Zacnaphane.
The weapon master shrugged.
Do you wish full dismissal from Bregan de Earth?
Zacnaphane glared at Jarlaxle but did not answer.
If so, and I grant it, and then you continue your pursuit of Arathis Yuin, you will be doing so merely as an agent of House Doerden, Jarlaxle explained. The implications of that are perhaps more dire than you recognize in this moment, so I will give you all the time you need to sort it out.
What do you want from me, Jarlaxle? Zacnaphane demanded.
And from me, Arathis Yuin agreed. You don't like each other, Jarlaxle said. I understand. Just do not kill each other, that is all. No fighting.
Then keep us apart, Arathis Yuin demanded. Surely your many plots are wide-flung enough that I never need see the likes of Zacnaphane again.
Nor I him, Zacnaphane agreed.
Insufferable, Jarlaxle remarked, looking to Kimuriel, who seemed wholly bored with all of this.
The mercenary leader heaved a great sigh and waved them all away. However she might play this, it was going to be delicate, she knew, and all of this was getting very dangerous for Dabney. She feared that she was in way above her abilities with Matron Sulez, never mind Zacnaphane and Arathis Yuin. That point was hard to ignore as she lay there next to Zacnaphane this quiet night. She looked to the bottom of the bed,
where the weapon master had hung his weapon belt, those beautiful sword hilts glimmering in the candlelight. She leaned over to study Zaknafane's breathing, so rhythmic and even. Surely he was asleep. Dabney could be done with all of this so easily. After all, Zaknafane was the one Matron Sulez wanted dead. And now, so easily, Dabney could grant Sulez her wish to be rid of him. Dabney would be brought into House Barriss and Delarmgo as a full priestess, perhaps even with a path to becoming a high priestess someday. Two, she would be a noblewoman again, and not a houseless rogue. Given Zaknafane's unending hatred of the Spider Queen, she figured that Lady Lolth would certainly bless the move as well. All she had to do was collect one of those swords and stab it through Zaknafane's heart as he slept. She stared at the weapons. She hated them, and hated what they might do. If she took one, she would be stabbing herself in the heart, no less than Zaknafane. But what choice did she have? She had put herself in an untenable situation, one that was very likely going to get her killed if anything at all went wrong along the way. Dabney buried her face in Zaknafane's hair. The sword called to her. She didn't look back at it. She couldn't.